Good morning. We're here at Brubaker Hall live via remote, and thanks to Craig Maroska and his engineering wizardry. We are here with many WSUA alums. WSUA was broadcasting from Brubaker Hall from 1963 to 1971, eight beautiful years here in this wonderful dorm. And they started out in a broom closet, very small room that had minimal amount of equipment and minimal and just about elbow room. Everyone was squeezed in like sardines, but they made it work. And then they moved into larger quarters off of the campus room or whatever. So with us here is the man who started it all, who got it from being a university radio council to a radio station. And that's Bill Alexander.
Hey, good morning.
It's so good to see you here.
It's really fun to be here. You know, you reminded me of the janitor showing me around in the basement of Brubaker Hall. We were looking for a spot for the radio station after we had dragged $1,200 out of the student council and many, many months of hassling over what it would be, where it would be. So the janitor was showing me different rooms in the basement. And, you know, there was a couple little spots, big spots, and then he brought me into this, what he called the broom closet. And this wasn't a broom closet. This was more like a 10 by 12 room. I couldn't believe it. And I said, wow, this is it. This is where we'll start. So, yeah, introduction by the janitor.
And, Bill, you had a roommate and a partner with all this, a partner in crime, we might say, Don Allen.
Yes,
and
Don Allen.
Don Allen's in California.
Don
wanted to make it here,
yeah.
But he, unfortunately, scheduling conflict prevented him from coming, but he just sends his regards and his good wishes, and he will be here next time we do something like this.
It was sad because Don and I worked with each other constantly. In fact, he was right there with me as the janitor was showing us around. And anyway, that was a long time ago in my dusty memory, but let's see, that was probably in November or December of 62 we were looking for the room. And
by February 22nd, 1963, you were signing on.
Yes, that was our first show. I think I spun the first record. I can't remember if Don did or I did.
What was the first record?
Oh, God.
Probably
some kind of jazz record. I can't. I can't remember.
So it wasn't a Bartok or Beethoven or
no,
something?
No, no. We were into probably it was a jazz program that started off and some Broadway shows and things like that.
Well,
we weren't allowed or we didn't really want to start with Top 40 or the doo-wop type thing, which really was our area of expertise. We started with jazz. I can't remember exactly why, maybe.
Well, my co-chair of the reunion, Bill McCannon, who's been doing a jazz show for 19 years on WCDB, will be pleased to hear that jazz started off radio broadcasting at the university. So,
yeah, definitely.
That's terrific, though.
And these were the days where the girls had to be in at 9 o'clock on weekdays, and they had to be in their dorms at 11 o'clock on Friday night and midnight on Saturday night. And so there was a huge kissing fest every Friday and Saturday night out in front of Brubaker and what was the Waterbury and what's the
Alden?
Alden, especially Alden Hall. Oh, my God, if you wanted to see a makeout party, there it was, about 11:45. Everybody was hugging and kissing and having a lot of fun.
Well,
then all the girls would go in the dorms, and where would the guys go? Bohini's across the street for a mini draft.
Which is now Abbott Tavern.
Oh, okay.
They reopened.
Okay. Or the WT, which, of course, is still there down the street. And the boys would stay out all night, and the girls, I don't know what they would do, but I guess they would fall asleep earlier, look out the window, and wish forlornly that they could be with us. And
then Nick Argyros became the first elected general manager.
In May of 63.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started to do occasional programs and things like that.
When did you graduate?
I graduated in January of 1966,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm a class of 65 guy, but I had one little course to do.
So you actually minored in classes and majored in radio, is
that
right?
Yeah, that was part of it. And I saw the move from the broom closet to Brubaker Hall. So that was a really nice studio that they moved to with a news ticker and.
You mean off the student union?
Yeah.
I mean that larger room, that spacious.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think we lasted in the broom closet for
two years
or so.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the story about the faulty equipment when we first started in the broom closet. None of it worked. We're there to broadcast. Our broadcast date was actually the beginning of January. 63, we went in, we worked the turntables, nothing worked. So I got all upset. I said, what's going on? So I called up the guy, used some Lafayette radio, which is a radio place that was, or a stereo place that was in town, and I said, Steve, nothing works. Well, what's the matter? What do you mean nothing works? The turntables aren't working right? The VU meters are not? He said, well, oh, you know, I used a lot of used parts. And I'm sorry, the $1,200 just wasn't enough money to build a decent station. I said, Steve, you better come back and build a station that we can use. And then Don talked to him for a while, and we had to threaten him with a lawyer to get him back here to finally, it took him a month to rebuild the whole station, put in the correct parts, and boom, there we were, February 22nd. We started out with, you know,
jazz.
With jazz that should have been there a month before.
Well, I'm glad it was so close to when CDV eventually signed on also, because you're only like 8 or 9 days, you know, within a week or so apart.
Oh, that was 1978.
So, but I mean,
in March.
But March 1st, as
okay,
you're February
right.
22nd, so
right.
The two stations have a very close start date, which makes
yeah.
it nice for joint reunions at the end of February.
Yeah,
I guess,
the 20th, the 40th for SUA and the 25th for
WCDV.
CDV. Now, SUA, we played around a lot with what would the call letters be. Don and I and the radio station committee and Dr. Salatino all sat down trying to figure out, well, what would they be? You know, what could they, you know? Back then, we were called Albany State. And people at the reunion last night, Paul said Albany State this and Albany State that. Now, I guess it's not called Albany State anymore.
No, it's UAlbany. Yeah.
UAlbany. So anyhow, we came up with SUA, State University at Albany, and
that's it.
It seemed to fit.
Well, I have to say something. That right now, this dorm, Brubaker Hall, is now on a 7th year of a 30-year lease with College of St. Rose.
Oh, no.
And if it wasn't for the College of St. Rose and the hospitality, and we got to thank them and all the folks at College of St. Rose for their hospitality and graciousness about to let us broadcast from this dorm and to be so hospitable. We have our banners up here. They put in a special phone line for us.
Oh, my gosh.
And they really bent over backwards, and I, you know, our real debt of gratitude goes out to them.
Well, are they still called Rosebuds?
Yeah.
Back in my day, a girl from St. Rose used to be called a Rosebud.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, we could
but it was an all
it, back.
It was an all-girls college back then.
I see.
And, boy, were we... We guys at SUNY were very popular with the girls at St. Rose. We always used to hang out and stuff like that. So
well,
that's great news.
Phil, thank you for coming in. We have a lot of people here. We have to move on, and we're going to...
I could go on for hours.
I know we could, but you're still local, so you can come back
right,
anytime.
Right. I can come back, okay.
And you can talk anytime.
So who's next?
John Mahalke is here, and John was with WSUA back in 69 and 70. Is that correct, John?
I joined WSUA in October of 1966, my freshman year, at Student Activities Day. Ooh, I sound so good on that.
Okay.
I lift your tones here. I haven't heard myself in years. I went on the air, it was sometime either in January or February of 1967, whenever we got back from our semester break. And I don't remember what my first song was. It was probably, it might very well have been the theme from the Pink Panther. I played a lot of Henry Mancini instrumentals coming out of news at the top of the hour from the WSUA Bannerline newsroom. And my shift was on between 5 and 7, or maybe 7 to 9. Anyway, it was always in the afternoon or early evening. So I used to call, and it was an easy listening format, so I called my show the JMPMEL, which stood for the John Mashelke Post Meridian Easy Listening Show. And some people who also had initials JM weren't too enthused that I stole their initials, but I don't have the copyright on it anymore, so you can get them back.
But you have these cards here from 1969 and 1970.
Right. WSUA,
those are the two I still held on to. The home of magic sounds?
I guess so. I was easy listening, and that was probably when we were in the top 40 changeover.
But you were in programming and news.
I was on the news staff for several semesters. During our period was the... all the unrest from the 1960s with the Vietnam protests and things, but we did have some here on campus. And in the last year I was here was when it really started getting bad. Our career ended a little bit after May 4th of 1970 when the Kent State shootings occurred out in Ohio. And everything more or less shut down, and the kids were sent home basically a month ahead of what they... We graduated on June 7th, so we had to come back after a month's leave, and we were all given the option of taking our grades as we had them or arrange some kind of special exam with our professors, and most people just took the grade that they had.
So the Kent State shooting really had that much of an impact
on
that? Yes,
it did.
I didn't realize that.
And before that, and I think May 1st of that year was the very first Earth Day, I believe. So I remember a lot of activities on campus in the lecture rooms and the various classrooms for Earth Day related.
April 22nd?
That could have been.
But I think
it was May 1st, like May Day. That may be wrong. It might have been April instead of May, but that date seems to work.
So in your time, Joel Lustig, who will be here, I hope.
Right.
And Wayne Fuller and Keith Mann. And Keith Mann's still local, too.
Yes, yes. For years, I remember going down to the Blue Note Record Shop, and he was co-manager or whatever. He would always wait on me when I went to get some old 45s back in the vinyl days.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
He worked there for many years.
And Doris and Abram Pock still own the Blue Note.
Oh, okay. And they were one of our sponsors. Back when I was on here, we had sponsors. We had the Waltz Submarines and Neva Roast Beef Sandwich People.
And we had Schlitz Beer.
And Schlitz Beer. And we used to run some Budweiser commercials that were with Ed McMahon when he was doing those.
Well, we turned non-commercial. Maybe we should go back.
Maybe we should get some revenue from that, I guess. And one of the things I remember, since my shift was always during dinner time, I had to get something to eat, so I would put on this album cut called Alice's Restaurant with Orlo Guthrie. It was 19 minutes and 20 seconds, which gave me enough time to go down the hall to the cafeteria, grab a tray of food, eat it there, and come back with maybe 2 or 3 minutes to spare.
Wow.
So anytime somebody tuned in and heard that, they knew where I was. And sometimes I put in a 5 or 6 minute cut to go to the bathroom after having a soda or something.
Well, now they play American Pie, I think.
Oh, yeah. Is that about the same length, I guess?
About 8 minutes or something.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't give me... You'd have to really have fast food back then.
8 or 9.
But,
oh,
yeah.
9 minutes?
Eight or nine.
Okay. Another time, we used to have in those days a network fee from ABC Contemporary or ABC Information Radio. And as I mentioned at our banquet last night, maybe I'll repeat it here. This isn't rerun season for those of you who didn't hear last night. Every afternoon at 5:25, we'd go to Howard Cosell with the sports. And I kept promising people they would hear that at 5:25, almost from the top of the hour when I came on the air. And about 2 minutes before we were supposed to switch to the network, somebody pushed the button and realized it was dead air, and we had nothing there to go out. So I quick went out into the lobby and grabbed the sports summary from the UPI teletype outside the on the counter, and I went back in, and at the appointed time I said, "Hello again, everyone. This is Howard Cosell speaking of sports." And then I had my Howard Cosell imitation, and at least I gave him what they... I always promised and delivered whatever I wanted.
That was wonderful.
Another thing we did that I was really fond of, Rich Stevens, whose name I'm sure they came up many times, he did a show from the Brubacher Game Room right off the studio, a variety show. It was late Sunday afternoon, either 5 or 6 o'clock, and... It was called the Rich Stevens Show, of all things.
And I
was his announcer. He was like Johnny Carson, and I was like Ed McMahon. I would introduce the show. And if we were lucky enough to have somebody scheduled for the following week in advance, I'd tell who was going to be on next week. And at the bottom of the hour, I would do the obligatory station identification. And I remember one time I said, "Oh, Rich, why do announcers have small hands?" And he said, "I don't know why." And I said, "We pause for station identification. This is WSUA 640, Albany, New York."
And we will pause here and introduce our next WSUA.
Okay.
Thank you, John, for
it's
coming.
It's very fun to be here.
It's been a real
again.
Pleasure. Thank you
and,
very much.
Glad people maybe enjoyed sharing some of the memories all through this weekend.
Well, I enjoyed
we'll
having
get some more today.
Okay, thank you, John, very much. Dan Gilbo is next. And Dan came all the way here from Charlotte. Is that Charlotte, North Carolina you came from?
Charlotte, North Carolina, yeah.
Charlotte, North Carolina. It's wonderful to have you here. I'm so glad you made the trip.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
What a trek. I'm telling you, you came with your wife, and that shows some real dedication. You must have some really great memories of WSUA.
Oh,
what years
yeah.
were you there?
I was here actually officially from 1965 through 67, and I hung around for 2 more years as a paid professional consultant. They paid me $1 a year after that. And I became involved. I was kind of sitting in Waterbury Hall homesick, and they had activities day, and I came over and I saw all these crazy people, Rich Stevens, Jim Grinnell, and a few other people. And I ran into a couple of people from my hometown, Paul Ockel and David Hughes. And I said, this looks like it might be a good group to get involved.
Your hometown's Amsterdam?
Yes, my hometown is Amsterdam, just west of here. Gambling capital of the world. We were known for carpets at one time.
That's right, Mohawk carpet, right?
Mm-hmm. And I became basically immersed in WSUA. It became my full-time occupation along with the Washington Tavern. And I had two shows that were weekly shows on the air, Easy Listening Show and Big Band Jazz Show. And in my sophomore year, I co-produced and wrote and announced a show that we actually, Lou Strong, the late Lou Strong, I just found out last night, he's passed away. Lou was our mainstay jazz announcer in those days, and we co-produced and wrote and announced a show that was funded by National Public Radio and aired on National Public Radio. It was called the Jazz Anthology Show, and it was probably the best work I did at WSUA, except maybe basketball games. I did those.
There's so many fond memories of jazz at the station back in SUA and CDV. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did basketball games, and as a funny anecdote that I can tell about the station, back in November of 1965, we had a power failure, and my engineer, Marty McIndoe, and I were, he was a former chief engineer of the station, we were having an early dinner in Waterbury Alden Hall, and all of a sudden the lights all went out. And my show was to air at 7 o'clock, and that was when we were supposed to go over and take over. And everybody was saying, well, the power's not going to be on for a long time. So we went to the Washington Tavern, where Harold and the rest of the people down there were feverishly pumping beer at 10 cents a glass as fast as they could to pump it all out before it got warm. And lo and behold, the lights went on at about, I think, 8 or 8:30. And I looked at Marty, and I said, we better go back, right? And he says, I think so, because if we don't, Tad Parks will kill us. So we went back up to the station, and lo and behold, there's Tad Parks and Art Loader, who was my newsman, who was one of the real mainstays of the station back in those days. They're already getting everything ready to go. The news is coming off the AP wire, and Art ripped off a bunch of copy and handed it to me and said, get in there and sign on. So I went in and signed on. And it was kind of interesting. I said, oh, this is WSUA. And I said, Art, you're the newsman. Let's go ahead and you take over. Meantime, he's out there with a pen marking up copy. And he finally said,
yeah, well,
gave me the high sign. And I said, yeah, you better take this over, Art, because I'm not doing too good. I'll just play straight music.
Art could very well be listening. He's still local.
That's
and he will be here later, so stick around.
I have to leave town, unfortunately. I'd love to see him. Art was...
Did you see him Friday night?
Didn't see him Friday. We missed the WT Friday night. We, unfortunately, coming back to town only sporadically over the years, we kind of filled up our dance card with old friends that we wanted to touch bases with, so we've been kind of moving around all over the area.
So did you have a... So did you have any other type of stories that you wanted to tell us about?
Well, the one, when we did basketball games, we actually started doing basketball games at least as early as 1965. I know the historiography said 68, but we actually played one home season at Hudson Valley Community College because the university gym wasn't ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over there to broadcast the Albany-Siena game, and lo and behold, New York Telephone hadn't installed their phone line. And Marty McIndoe, at that point, was the engineer. He and Steve Ostro were both there. And what are we going to do? Marty went to a lady at the school there and said, I have to make an important phone call. Can I use your office for a second? And she said, sure. Next thing I knew, Marty and Steve are taking apart the phone and hooking up their phone line to our phone hookup, and we had our Albany and Siena basketball game broadcast that night.
That's a terrific stuff. And your wife was at WSUA. Did you meet her? at the campus, or did you meet her after?
I met her at a campus party. At that time, she was going with another alumnus of WSUA, Chris Walters.
Uh-huh.
And they came to one of our parties when we lived across the street from the WT. And we maintained our friendship over the years, and I ended up marrying Debbie 13 years ago.
Wow. Well, I'm Debbie's here, and I'm glad both of you are here, and thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you. And safe travels back. You want to see you here more often?
Oh, we will be here.
All right. Next up, we have a wonderful wonderful surprise all the way from California, from KOST. We have Mike Saccharides.
How are you?
Oh, Mike, it's terrific. You're the midday host of KOS. You have been for, what, 21 years?
November 15th will be 21 years.
Unbelievable.
In Los Angeles, it's the number one adult contemporary station in Los Angeles.
You're one of our stars, I'll tell you.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be treated that way, but if it weren't for WSUA, I don't know what the story would be right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I've heard that consistently. We have about 45 folks that have followed, you know, from the way from college right now into broadcasting or music industry, and they all said if it wasn't for this campus radio station, regardless of AM or FM, they wouldn't have been where they are today.
I guess essentially what this station did, being a student association activity, did was it filled the gap. I had originally come to college presuming, well, I'll study a liberal arts, kind of find myself. And the irony was that the radio station helped me find myself. I had tinkered with electronics and CB radios when I was a kid, and I also would put together my own music. I was like the first kid on the block with a reel-to-reel recorder back in 1962 with my paper route money. So what I did was I would borrow the other kids' records, because 45 cost about 66 cents, you know, and it would cost 66 cents for two songs. I think some kids today would consider that expensive, let alone in that time. I would borrow the kids' records, and I would assemble all these tapes that only cost $1.29 for a reel of tape that I could put 30 songs on, and I was saving a bundle. I thought I was a genius. You know, here's 4 cents a cut instead of 33 cents a cut. What I didn't realize was I was putting the songs in the order I liked to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize was I was starting to get the nuance of mixing genres.
Mm.
And what I didn't realize was I was getting used to the idea of being my own programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you combine that with using my paper route money again for the CB radios and trying to buy better and better equipment, I eventually moved on to the ultimate CB's radio microphone. It was called the D104. I think it cost something like $20. And like when you had a D104, you sounded good, and I fell in love with my voice, quite frankly.
So many other people fall in love with your voice over the years too. So
fortunately,
it's a good voice. It's a very good voice.
Fortunately, a lot of other folks said, you have a nice voice on the CB. So now that gets to you in two ways. You're putting together your own music. You're getting these compliments about your voice and your presentation on the CB radio. And it was only logical when I got to college and I got to Waterbury Hall. That was the other very important thing, being in Waterbury Hall and being adjacent to Brubacher Hall, just a dash across the
quad. So what years were you at SUA?
I came to SUNY Albany in September 1968.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated a little early, December 71st.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent those 3.5 years with WSUA in various capacities, mostly as an announcer.
So do you remember that Kent State story we just heard?
Yes, in fact, that was a very traumatic experience because, I mean, people were upset about the war. People were going to Washington to protest from the war. I remember very distinctly in November 1969, all of us going down to Washington and protesting the war from buses that were launched from this campus,
mm-hmm.
literally in a motorcade down to Washington, D.C. But when they shot the kids on the campus, and that had actually been preceded by the shootings of black students on a southern campus, which didn't get nearly the publicity, and you can see how politically incorrect that was. When those kids were shot on the Ohio State campus, Kent State, it just galvanized every kid in the country who said, enough, now you're bringing the war to the campus.
Well, the Kent State shooting, and then we heard that last night that shortly after WSUA went on the air was President Kennedy's assassination, and that really sent shockwaves to the campus also. So this station, the history of the station, has really been impacted through major moments in time, you know, major events.
And I'm sure that when the kids had to react to that, they reacted in a professional fashion and produced specials and documentaries and ongoing coverage, just as WSUA's news department became involved in reporting how students felt on this campus and reporting the events on this campus and at campuses nationwide. And I saw another instance of WSUA staff being very, very professional. The year that a plane had crashed in Albany, filled with local people, largely GE managers and executives.
And Mohawk Airways.
Mohawk Airways.
And they crashed in a house in Pine Hill section, I believe?
Yes.
And it was the time when you were having your banquet?
We were having the banquet, and the news, I don't know how the news got into our banquet, but the news came in. There's a plane crash. It's right in the city. It's right in a house. This is not something that's landed on a parkway or something like that. And everyone was galvanized again. Just ran out. Our news people ran out in a flash, got into their cars or whatever transportation they had, brought their mobile units along, their recorders along, and proceeded to cover that story, covering it so well that the news was immediately fed to WABY, WPTR, ABC affiliates, and the reports from our WSUA alumni ended up being broadcast nationwide because they were the first ones on the scene. It was a weekend night, and most news crews from the commercial stations were already gone. Well, so I'm very proud of that, too. That is why WCDB and its predecessor, WSUA, are important in this community, because we have to develop our communication skills and we have to give our point of view on the news, and it has to be represented, and we have to develop those skills.
Well, when I was at WCDB in 78 to 85, but in 80 and then 84, we did an election night college network, so that news emphasis has been carried on, and the first general manager of WCDB was Paul Rosenthal, who was the last news director of WSUA. So the news departments have really been a major, had a major impact in the programming and the stature of the two radio stations.
And you know, last night we had a wonderful banquet, and Paul was memorialized at the, and it is so sad that we have lost this very, very valuable member of the broadcast community. But because of his good work and because of the impression he left on others, we've developed news here on WCDB. Now, what concerns me is news gathering is probably the most expensive thing a radio station can do. It's a lot cheaper to just play wall-to-wall music. And I'm concerned about the future of WCDB and whether it will be able to continue to fund purchasing equipment for broadcast, remote broadcast, and, developing a news department.
I think through the efforts of the alumni, we'll be able to hopefully make that happen and, you know, turn that around. And I also think that through the efforts of the university with their new coursework, classes in broadcast journalism that they're developing through television journalism as well as radio journalism, maybe CDB could be a part in partnership with the university. And that could also be a developing factor also.
Ironically, I think it's a little late that SUNY is catching up with developing a broadcast journalism course here, but better late than never. And the same thing happened on my own son's campus at Cal State Fullerton in Southern California. They're just developing the radio and TV and film department now, while they've had an outstanding theater department and music department all along. So what I say is better late than never.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I'm so glad you came here, and I'm so glad to have seen you. I've talked to you on the phone for the past few months, and it's You came all the way from California, and I'm so happy you did. Thank you so much. You have made such a nice addition to this whole event.
Thank you. I really enjoyed all the reminiscences, not just last night, but Bill and Dan and John just now. I'm looking forward to these 4 hours.
You're really terrific. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We have with us the one of the original WSUA directors from the first executive team, Ian Lee.
Sorry, Art Loader.
Art Loader the second. I always get the two of them confused. Look at that picture. Wow.
That's not me, though.
That's not you either. Okay. Is that Ian Lee?
No. That's a fellow named Frank Crowley.
Okay. Well, on radio, you can't see pictures, so we're...
Well, it's a reminder of...
All right.
I was one of the early people, and in the early days, we ran a... it was rather a primitive operation, but clearly over the years, things have changed and improved, and we always strove to increase the, bring the standards up.
I knew I was going to get one person. I knew I was going to get one person's name incorrect, but you'll forgive me. But you still live in the area.
Yes, I live actually only a few blocks away.
You got a brisk walk over, huh?
Well, I parked the car because I got a couple things I got to do this afternoon. But
what are you doing these days?
I'm retired. Unlike the previous gentleman, my field was biology, and I was a science major, and so I intended originally to teach, and did not find myself fulfilled by the student teaching experience. So I wound up diagnosing tuberculosis for New York State for 35 years.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So, and interesting and socially useful occupation, career. It's been worthwhile. I retired about a year now.
So was it really exciting when you, 40 years ago, when you applied the first executive team? What was
well,
like?
The truth is I don't remember an awful lot about that. I'm fairly sure I joined... WSUA after it had actually gotten on the air, but possibly not too long. I don't remember, to be honest, the date. Do you happen to know the first air date? Because I don't remember.
February 22nd, 1963.
So that sounds like I might have joined in March.
Well, Mick Argyro said you were the first on his executive team, and he gave me your title. What is in the history?
I was. We had a varied schedule back then. It was in, and I have never been a huge fan of pop music, in the moderately early days of rock and roll, and I was a disbeliever. But we had middle of the road and classical and film music. I did film music, something I actually truthfully feel more equipped to do now than then, because I've still been interested in it.
So you were tap dancing then, right?
Well, everybody,
sort of made it up as you went along.
Yeah, everybody sort of doubled in brass. I mean, I did utility announcing, and I read news, and lots of odds and ends stuff. I mean, one of the things I brought was I kept a, and I had to look it up on the internet to find out the exact date, because I was foolish enough not to write it down. But I kept an actual teleprinter report. This was the form we did our news from. We piggybacked a UPI teleprinter from another local radio station that one of the guys, and I don't know who it was, Nick would know, managed to get. I think we got the use of the information without paying any money. We were then, and I'm sure is now, a very tightly budgeted operation. And they would the procedure would be they would do updates every 20 minutes or half an hour or something like that, and you would get essentially a pre-designed set of news briefs, headlines, and it was designed to run about 5 minutes, and the top gives seven or eight paragraphs of the basic stories, and then at the bottom a headline, so you could do it either the full the longer version or just a quick headline story. And the one I kept, the headline the headline read, the Soviet Union's Communist Party has stripped Nikita Khrushchev of his post as premier and party chief. The action was taken while Khrushchev was away from Moscow on vacation. That was the sort of thing you got into. This, I kept this because it was historically a fairly important, at that time, piece of copy. I see it is 10:15. This is 10:15. I'm sorry. I had to look up Khrushchev on the internet and found that he was displaced on 10:14. And now when I look at the...
Well, it says here, the Central Committee of the Communist Party acting Wednesday named two top Khrushchev lieutenants to succeed the 70-year-old leader. Leonid Brezhnev was named party leader, making him the most powerful man in Russia. And then they mentioned Kosygin, and it was named premier. So that was quite a momentous time. International news.
Yeah, and there was.
What was your? Were you the news director? What was your first?
I have to tell you, I'm not absolutely sure. We had, as I say, there was so much utility work being done that it's a little hard to remember what everybody's title was. I mean, there were people were in and out of positions, fairly often. I was saying the other night, I was talking to Ted Parks and Ian Leith Friday night, and it was a little difficult to know who exactly held what spot, because and also it was a little hard to keep track of individuals because everybody had their own time slot, and we relatively seldom had meetings as an organization as a whole. So when I look through the yearbook picture, I see lots and lots of people that I sort of recognize the name, but I don't recognize the face. And that was because even with a relatively short schedule, at that time I think we were doing 5 o'clock at night to 11 o'clock at night, and I don't remember what our weekend hours were. They were longer than that, obviously. But still, people would come in and they would do their shift. And if you didn't work as an announcer or a newsman at that time, you probably wouldn't get to know them. So it's sort of an unfortunate thing. As I said, I look through, I've got 2 yearbooks, and I don't recognize it. Unfortunately, an awful lot of people.
Right. Well, that's why I did the brief history that we created, so that we can refresh people's memory. But I don't have it in front of me now.
I'd taken a semester off. I came back, I was doing graduate work, and then my 4 weeks from when I should have started my training for the Peace Corps, my neck was broken in a horrific car accident between the second and third cervical vertebrae. I spent months in intensive care, and I came back to the finally came back. I needed one summer course to have graduated. I was a week from the final in that, as I recall, and then Dean Perlmutter of the School of Arts and Sciences was the instructor, and he said, "Well, look, you can take the test and get an A, or you can just take a B and you're done." And I said, "I'm done." So I left here in the summer of 68 and moved on.
And what did you major in?
I majored in social studies and in English.
Or did you major in radio and minor in classes?
That is what happened to most of us, it seems. And we did pull those late shifts. Now, the interesting thing, Mark, is that I think students today might relate to is, when we started, we did a lot of classical music, we did folk music, we did show music, all of which was really good. And then there was a revolt one day. And I still remember the day of the vote, all the members got to vote, when we changed format and go, sort of, rock and roll. And it won by, hands down, I'd say. We changed the format, and I guess the station has never looked back.
No, it hasn't. It's been quite the trek. So, and we've both been more than top 40. We've also been progressive and leading edge, and the story we were just hearing from Nick and Bob Lawson stopped in. Bubba,
Bob.
And he talks about the Beatles controversy.
Yes,
and that was a year before your time, it seems.
Right around that time, as I recall.
So tell me,
do I know who did it? No, and I already know that Bob Lawson denies it strongly. I wondered if it wasn't Dwayne White. Did you ever talk to Dwayne about that?
Well, I called him in Corinth. He was impressed that I knew his nickname was Dewey. Thanks to Linda telling me that his name was Dewey.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just a bit shy. He's a bit shy. He didn't want to come up. I called him this morning also.
Mm.
He didn't want to come. He said, I'm not much of a reunion person, and he made other plans, so...
That's interesting. Has he been teaching all these years or doing something
He's
else?
He's not very verbose on the phone. Just,
yeah.
Very quick conversation.
Well, Dwayne was not one of our star announcers. Dwayne did a lot of the tech stuff at the station.
Mm-hmm.
He found himself a little more at home doing that, which maybe is still the case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we're getting notes now.
Yeah. So, tell me, what brought you into doing a bicycle shop business and being an attorney?
That's not a usual combination. I don't know. Attorneys need a human side. That's important. Except I've been doing that much longer than I've been an attorney. The biking got to be a really big thing in the late 60s.
Yeah.
There were started to be a few bikes on campus. I followed along with that interest. And when I graduated, there just wasn't any bike shops in the area that really dealt with this new wave of cycling, which was adult cycling. So, becoming an aficionado and seeing that opening, I opened the store, my first store, and never looked back from that either. It was a lot of fun, and as you know, it still is a lot of fun.
Well, I have a couple of tires that need repair, so I'll be over in a little bit.
Well, if they needed kicking, I'd be right here. But well, thank you so much again, Mark,
It's been a real pleasure. Before you go, Bob, I just wanted people to know who are listening there that... who are listening on WCDV that we're doing a reminiscence and a reunion at... And we're talking about the early days of radio at the university when WSUA was on the air. And if anyone wants to come down here to Brubaker Hall, where it all began, we're bringing it back to where it all began. You can come down. The Brubaker Hall is between Partridge and Ontario and between Western and Washington. And the hall entrance to the Brubaker Hall faces Washington Avenue, the big field that's in between Washington and the school. So we wanted to have a... we want more people to come down, and please join us. We got plenty of parking spaces outside. Won't be an issue, and you know, we can get on the air and talk to us. But we're between Partridge and Ontario, between Washington and Western Avenue.
Let me ask you one final question, Mark. Did you reach Jim Grinnell at all?
Jay Grinnell. He goes by Jay. I found that.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Western New York, and he wanted to be here this weekend. And something unfortunate came up at the last minute, and. He had to. Wayne Fuller also wanted to be here. So, for a lot of people, you know, as you saw from the honorary committee we assembled, they have very fond feelings and very supportive. And you know, no one ever said, "Oh, not the hat. What are you doing that for?" They were all very supportive. Everyone wanted to be a part of this weekend in some fashion.
I think that radio inclination just perseveres through all these years.
Well, I got you up from Columbia County, and I've been trying to get you on the phone for a long time.
I've been out of the country a lot.
Yes, how's Scotland doing?
Scotland was one. I saw 42 productions there this summer.
What kind of productions? Plays?
Mostly theater. A couple of readings, John Irving, and I got to meet Susan Sontag and talk with her a little bit. But the shows were just incredible. We could do two or three a day, the way they would set up the schedule. So that was wonderful. And more recently, some of the law stuff. You didn't talk about it much, but a lot of what I do is end up suing the governor on behalf of large institutions. And one of those suits was very prime this week and required a lot of late-night work. And fortunately, my part in that is now it looks like I finished it. Let me come down today.
Well, I'm so glad you were here. Welcome, and I'm sure I hope this won't be the last time that you're on the air with us. We're going to do this many more times, and I'm really hope that you'll come back again. So,
that'd be great.
You're so close. And by the way, I got to talk to you because the Hudson Register Star wants to do a story about this, and you're the local hook. And they won't do it without your local hook. So, please,
that's right.
I got to call you and talk to you about
it. Well, I serve on a school board out there, so there's a good chance I may even know the reporter. So that'd be a nice start.
Okay, thank you. We can get some more publicity about this. Thank you, Bob.
Excellent. Thank you,
Mark. Okay, appreciate that. And we have another radio alum from the early days who spent a very short time at the radio station, but nevertheless added to the history. And he is still in Albany, and he had many degrees and has a very varied background. and his name is Bruce Lorenz. And Bruce, welcome, and tell us what years you were at the radio station.
Well, Mark, I was at the radio station from 1966 to 1967, and I had a classical music radio show every Sunday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., and then precisely at 10 a.m., I would turn the dial, and we would get our ABC news feed.
There you go. And we were ABC back then, and that was a terrific network to get the best news that
Absolutely.
Were coming out. And then we were top-notch in terms of that, in terms of choosing the networks and putting the money in to get that feed and that sort of thing. And you played classical music. Well, classical music is really what started the whole
right.
series on the radio. And that was 1963, that was the major format, along with bluegrass and some country and folk and jazz. But you really, you know, kept that classical spirit alive. And I don't know, you know, it sort of petered out a little after that, after 66 and 67. And it went more towards sports and news, towards 70. And then we had a bit of apathy in the mid-70s from the radio station. But, you know, there's 15 years of an AM radio station that really was a wonderful experience for a lot of people, I'm sure, for yourself as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was living at the time at Waterbury Hall, right across the alumni quad, and at 7:45 in the morning, I would race across the quad, and it was usually either all muddy or all ice, and I would get to the station there, and waiting for me would be either Steve Ostro, who was our chief engineer,
mm-hmm.
or Wayne Gearing, one of his deputy engineers.
And you saw Steve this weekend, huh?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I
nice
sure
reunion,
did.
Huh? Nice
really.
Reunion.
And actually, I gave him a little kind of memory jolt. I told him how much I loved in those days. We had a broadcast of War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely fabulous. Orson Welles, 1938, so it was the 30th anniversary when it was broadcast on WSUA in 1968.
But you didn't have anyone else panicking like they did 30 years earlier, I bet, huh?
Certainly hope not. I doubt it. But
and
there's the power of radio for you. Most
okay.
impressive.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much for coming in and spending a few minutes. And we have another illustrious radio alum, Bob O'Brien. And, Bob, I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad
to see you. It's been so many years since I haven't seen you, and you haven't changed a bit. That face is still the same. Take care, Doug. We didn't need a name tag for you last night. I knew you who you were, and it's been so good to see you here.
I knew who you were. We were there, Goldman, Mark Rappaport, Kevin Tutt, and I were there the first night. I think our Radio Free Albany was the first
comedy
show, non-music show being broadcast
okay.
after the Bruce Springsteen song.
And Andy Lederer?
Andy Lederer was there, and Andy Lederer written jokes for Rodney Dangerfield.
He sends his regards, by the way. I'm in touch via email with him, even though he's...
What is his email address? I've got it.
Well, I can't tell you on the air.
You know, you look exactly the same to you, but look a little grayer.
Oh,
but
that's just white.
For those who don't know, Mark used to deal with Mario Cuomo. Well, I was friends with Governor Cuomo and
yeah,
all kinds of things. Here at CDB, the first show, Radio Free Albany, or They Drink Skim Milk, Shankman was the producer, and I was told, I think I went on with a, did you ever chew gum or something and go on the air? So someone says you cannot chew gum on the air, and that's exactly what went wrong.
And Kevin Kelton is a one, you know,
for Fridays, mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live, and is he still here?
Kevin, he might be. I'm not sure, but tell me what you're doing now.
I write and sometimes play bluegrass music, and I teach school.
Mhm. And you teach school where?
I teach all over the city of Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah, I lived in New York for many years. I
the astounding city of Buffalo?
Yeah, it's not as hip as this right here, but in the 80s I had all these people that worked at CDB and at the paper went down to New York, and we did everybody from Lou Reed.
What years were you at the station?
78 to 80, And you start, in those days, you started with an overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to do 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. to kind of like pay your dues.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do an overnight? Did you ever have to do an overnight?
I only did news.
You
so
only did news.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because everyone spun, my camera's not here, he did news, and you forget who spun this and who did news.
Yeah.
But news was great. But we did, we were in the St. Regis mm-hmm. Hotel. There was, you know, remember when Dire Straits came up?
Sure.
The
oh, yeah.
Studio.
Yeah, yeah.
And Live Wire, they were big at the time. And the shirts, Annie Golden, who went on to do the show, you know, with the Phil Spector and whatever material, right? And Annie Golden and the did she do Grease? But Annie Golden came
mm-hmm.
up there at Southside Johnny and Robert Fripp
mm-hmm.
and Elie Wiesel.
Yes, Elie Wiesel, yeah.
Came up, yeah. And
I'm not sure if he was my graduation speaker or not.
What year did you graduate?
81.
Your speaker was Isaac Bashev Singer.
Oh, okay. Well, same type of...
Well, he was near the radio station. He wasn't back on the radio station. He said, yeah, you know. And Ron Levy was the keynote speaker. So Singer said in your speech, because I was there because I stayed next year.
But you remembered it 25 years later.
22 years later. He said, when art tries to be science, when art tries to ape science, it becomes that, an ape. Art should not try to be science. Art is art. Art is a story. You know, I mean,
and let me ask you, do you ever run into Doug Ryan in Buffalo? Do you know Doug Ryan? He was one of the chief engineers at the station.
Oh.
We've been trying to reach him, and he lives in Buffalo.
There's a Buffalo-Albany connection. The great thing about Albany is that, well, is this peak weekend?
Peak?
Is this peak?
Foliage?
Yeah, foliage. Or did we pass the peak?
By 1 week, we passed
okay.
the peak.
All right.
We're on the downslide.
Well, this is, you live in Albany. This is one of the most beautiful places to live in the world.
Absolutely.
You have the Northway. You've got...
We're a three-hour radius from everywhere.
Yes.
You know, Montreal, Boston, New York City, Philly area, you know, the Poconos.
Right.
and there's nothing here. We're just 3 hours from everywhere else.
Suzanne Gerber didn't make it tonight. Linda Quinn Hanley is here. Did you know Suzanne Gerber and Jagus and I, we hitchhiked from Albany, from the stations on the third floor of
mm-hmm.
the Campus Center. We were on probably the first floor of the Campus Center. We agreed spontaneously to just go to Montreal. And we went in January, where it was frozen. But that's the beautiful thing about Albany. Boring.
No,
Melville grew up right here, so that means before he went out in his formative years, like to sea,
yeah.
when he went, he left, what would be the cool word, disembarked, made ships from Albany. It was
That's
from
right.
Albany. He was right here. All those stories.
McGeary's, where McGeary's Bar is where Melville started to write Moby Dick.
Oh.
And there's a big plaque, a historic plaque
oh
down
my
there.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, there's this big Melville connection.
He was born in New York, but he really, his years, like, say, the age of 5 to 18, mm-hmm. he was here.
Mm-hmm.
So he became a, like all of us, because we all came here in college, right?
Right.
We did our first overnight, many overnights.
Well.
That's a benefit.
So,
but
so did you mainly do the comedy show, or? Comedy? So, who, it was, oh, what's it, Eric, no, not Eric Osborne Goldstein, but Eric Goldstein.
Right.
Did comedy.
They did it. It was really Rappaport and Goldman and Kevin Kelton. And I was part of that team. I'm not a comic. They're the comics. I was sort of
the
writer. Yeah.
The straight
sort
man
of,
for them?
Sort of. Kind of. Right. You know, you see the bruises. I was a lot. They all went down and did stand-up after I met them here when it was still SUA. So they
yeah.
all did stand-up and Andy Letter told jokes to Rodney Dangerfield. And did Rappaport sell one? And he eventually wrote for Roseanne. Was Kevin on? Did you have Kevin on before?
We had him on during the weekend.
Oh, okay.
Who
wrote
Friday,
Fridays and Saturdays?
Yeah, yeah,
night
Friday
every
he was on. Yeah.
Show, right,
yeah, yeah.
right.
He Cheers, I think he did, or one of the...
He did everything.
Yeah.
No, he became then producer of Night Court. He became
Night Court.
Executive.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
right. But then you have... coming from there, they went and spent a famous summer doing stand-up.
Well, it's interesting because the reason I'm talking to you about the comedy stuff is because
yeah.
we talked about classical, we talked about
oh.
jazz, we talked about all the formats, the sports, the news in the 70s, and we, you know, and I mentioned to someone that we have done comedy shows regularly. One, I remember the your comedy show, and we never.
Did you canvas the joke that was actually sold to Rodney Dangerfield?
No.
Andy Letter? Oh. We must say this. He said, I got no respect. First of all, before they did the joke, Rappaport, you know Rappaport?
Mark
said,
Rappaport.
He said, well, Dangerfield said, it's got to be I Don't Get No Respect format material. And Rappaport said, you do I Don't Get No Respect material too? To Rodney Dangerfield. I think that's brilliant.
And
time. And then, so the joke he sold was, I got no respect. I got no. Andy Letter sold it to Rodney Dangerfield.
Mm-hmm.
I walked into a bar and ordered a double. They brought out a guy who looked just like me. Now, whether you think it's funny, he got $50 for it, and now it probably get, you know,
thousands.
$500 at least.
Well, we're on WCDD Albany. I had to do that legal
yeah.
ID.
All right.
Remember those?
Is that
1 Remember
o'clock?
Those legal
ID? Go like this. You point to your eye.
<1 o'clock.
laughs> Fab listeners out there, you point to your eyes. Station ID. So it's one exactly, or is it?
It's one exactly. Well, it's just after one, but
right.
they changed the laws where you can do it when it's most propitious or whatever.
Really?
You know? So you don't have to do it right at the top of the hour.
Oh.
When you get the time when you can actually do it. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's so you came in just for this right here? Yeah. You didn't have any other business in the area? This is a special trip for 7 hours just
for
this?
Well, if someone still lives on Delaware Avenue, maybe. I didn't know. As far as I know, there was nothing.
That's terrific that you did this, that you came in 7 hours
for this.
I'm so impressed.
4.5. You can do it in 4.5.
From Buffalo?
Even if you go speed limit, you can do it in 4.5 now. Yeah. You can do it. It's much quicker than...
You fly low.
Yeah, right. The canal. We take the canal the whole way. Check out the current. Did you know the Erie Canal ends in Waterville? So it would go from there. Do you know that? Did you go down there and look at the locks?
Locks and bagels.
We
got bagels here. That's right.
We were just doing that this morning, red button.
No, but we
let the canal go.
But
salmon, a lock.
In the mid-'80s or late-'80s, Matilda Cuomo had the Geary Canal as her baby, you know.
Right.
And I went on this media tour where I took the canal ride with her.
Oh.
And we went and we did through all the locks, all the way through to Buffalo and back. And it was absolutely a phenomenal trip.
Yeah,
I just, you know, they opened it up for the first time in many years.
You can go from there to Europe if you want. So you can literally go from, say, Cleveland. You'd have to go through the Great Lakes, and you have to go through there, and you have to go down the Hudson, and you have to go across. I mean, a crossing was something that one did at the time. So far as, I saw Kevin, he talked about his older brother Bobby, was a stand-up with the improv, and Jerry Seinfeld, when he went down to do comedy from CDB, was MC. So you had a Jerry Seinfeld with glasses hanging out saying, okay, who's on next? You know, and Elaine Boozler,
I like
Miller,
a lot.
And David Letterman and everybody.
But what did you do right after you graduated?
I stayed here and went to Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you stayed here and went to Europe.
I stayed here for a while.
One or the other.
And I went to Europe, and then I came back here. Yeah, right. No, I was one of the few people who managed to do both. You can do both. With the Concorde, right? You know, you can go to...
Not anymore.
Lunch.
They just had the last flight.
Yeah, this was in the
80s.
You could do lunch. You want to do lunch? Sure. Well, from there, most of us, I was saying, from CDB went down to Rockville. There's Linda's Hamlet.
Okay.
So we all went to Rockville, and we... Did you know about that stuff, right?
Yes, I did.
So
but no one else we're talking to knows. I mean, tell
no
me anyway. Tell me anyway.
Because I guess none of us... Like, who else from the station... Shankman was instrumental. Janice Bialkoff was here. She was concert board.
Right.
You know?
But Richard Shankman regrets that he couldn't make it here.
Oh, Richard couldn't make it. Okay.
But he was very supportive. He was in the honorary committee. He really wanted to be here, part of the reunion.
We had Johnny Rotten. And, you know, we were on 57th Street, and we had Carly Simon. I flew out to Martha's Vineyard to talk to Carly Simon. We spent the weekend there, and I...
Did she tell you who you're so vain is?
It was about you. It was about that guy Mark in all things. That's true. And we did. That's what we did. And it was fun. And 7th Avenue. And then when we moved down to Little Italy, this was all in New York, we were next to John Gotti. And we used to see his meetings on Wednesday night. And when people come and kiss his hand from our office, that's the way it was.
Sure.
We had Johnny Rotten came 3 times, wouldn't speak to us, and then finally did.
That was a rotten thing for
us. Rotten thing. And we had Peter Gabriel and Paul Simon in the Brill building. And did we get anyone, though? Hammer did news here.
Yes,
and
he did.
He ended up going to... I wonder if I can say this and get him in big trouble.
No, you can say
it. He went into the White House to talk to Al Gore in 1998.
No.
Mm-hmm. And then he went down in Congress to Molinari.
Right. Who?
Briefly, his girlfriend.
Mike Hammond?
I'm saying this on the air.
Really? Mike Hammond?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Now she married Bill Paxton.
Married Bill Paxton.
Yeah. From Buffalo.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton, the congressman
sort of
from Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm.
Oh, you're not happy about that.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, it's been great having you here. You are so, you are terrific.
You
are, you were a legend in the early days of CDB. And
thanks for doing this, for arranging it.
It's been a real pleasure. And you know, I'm so glad you showed up. And we're going to have another radio alum coming in.
Quote Marla May.
And the, and since we're doing an oral history, and I've been not always announcing everyone's name, I'm going to let you announce your name.
That's
and
okay.
Tell me your class years that you were here.
When I was on the radio station, okay, my name is Linda Quinn, now Linda Hanley, and I was on the station from about 79 until 81, and I do remember you. You were news. I remember very much so. I used to have long hair, maybe.
I remember you.
Okay.
I always thought you were related to Dearman.
No, I know.
So tell me what you did at the station.
I did a rock show, and I also did experimental shows, and that got me in a lot of trouble.
Well, tell me what experimental was then, because now it's probably oldies.
Yeah, right. Basically, the one thing that it's like the most prevalent memory of CDB, I did a show with Suzanne Gerber called Lonesome Electric Turkeys on Drugs. It all happens at once anyway. And now I guess people call it sampling. But what we did was we put some, like, jazz on the reel-to-reel. We used PSA carts, and then we did, like, some rock and maybe some classical on the turntables. And what we did was we potted things up and down, and we kind of make like a sound montage.
Oh.
So we play some songs, and then maybe we intersperse within, like, say, I don't know, let's just use The Who or Yes. We were playing that maybe on the turntable, and then we pick, you know, pot up some Art Ensemble of Chicago playing at the same time, but it kind of worked, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what happened was, I guess I just said Jim Diamond was listening, who was the GM at the time, and he called the other and said, "Do you hear what's going on the radio?" And so we got kind of
in trouble.
We got in trouble. So,
what
were
you doing wrong that you got into trouble?
Because it was a rock show, and we shouldn't have been doing that.
Oh.
Another time I got in trouble was...
You cared about format, huh?
They cared. Well, that's...
Did you hear what happened the first year of WSUA?
No.
There was someone who went to... who got a hold of a tape from a concert in Hamburg, Germany. And this was a station that played classical and folk and bluegrass. And they dared to play this band from Hamburg, Germany on the air. And it was the Beatles. It was the first... We were the... SUA was the station who played Beatles for the first time in this country. And the guy got kicked off the air. And Nick Argyros, who's the first general manager, was here telling us that he had the honor of the distinction of kicking the guy off the air. So you're lucky to get kicked off the air, Lee. You didn't have someone as hard-nosed as Nick Argyros.
Well, you know, I think that's one thing that I wrote in the comments, was that I feel that college radio should remain an experimental experience, and that kids should be able to do whatever they want. If they want to be real professional, as if they were in a commercial station, well, then that's their right, you know. And then, or kids that want to experiment and mix, even if it's genre based, like going from, I think yesterday someone was playing some really great blues and went to ZZ Top. I mean, that's like brilliant. That's what college radio is about, I believe. And
well, you're right, it is, absolutely.
So, I did do some radio over at RPI also, where you were allowed to do things like that. But actually, their format was seven different types of music within every hour of the show. So,
and what do you do now?
Right now, I'm an at-home mom.
Okay, great.
I have a son who's an actor.
Really?
Yeah, he's a voiceover actor for Nickelodeon.
Okay.
And just, you know,
so
advertising agencies.
He got those genes from you.
I know. I was wondering how, but. Maybe you could explain to me what they're going to be doing with this foundation. I think this would be interesting for people to know.
Well, the foundation is going to be raising money to get to help the radio station improve, grow, get better, bigger, and you know, when there's a, you know, it takes time to draw up a master plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we're going to raise money, and whatever the short term needs are, we'll be able to cover those. Right now, the budget is below $20,000, a little below $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Back when you and I were there, it was more like $60,000. So while the costs have all increased, the budget has dramatically gone down. The university doesn't give major support. Never was opposed to that. Wasn't the student association. We had a lot of political connections with them. People from the station down in the finance committee and central council, which is now the SA Senate, and they just, you know, they had these connections, so the money flowed towards us. But in the past 15 years, 10 years, mm-hmm. that political end of things with the radio station really petered out.
Mm-hmm.
So the money went towards other groups.
Right.
And we really, you know, we're working on a real baseline. And the baseline budget didn't cut it, even because we had to buy new equipment, digital and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it really got to be a real problem. So other things went down the drain at the station, and other things improved, like, you know, because the money, the few resources. So we're going to try to bolster that up and keep it going and make it better.
Right.
And a better future, bigger future.
Well, yeah, we hope that there'd be a lot of recruitment, like
mm-hmm.
really getting kids out there.
Yep.
In.
Well, I formally incorporated the Friends of WCDB and WSUA Inc. on October 8th.
Great.
And the papers are here as a documentation, so this is what we're going to be planning on doing.
Great.
And we're going to work in conjunction with whoever we need to work in conjunction with to make it happen. So,
well, great.
I'm glad you can be a part of this.
Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Definitely keeping on your mind.
All right. We got a couple of
yes.
more guests and alums coming in. We're going to have Joan or Trudy. One, we have only room for one. We have one mic. So who wants to go first? Joan?
Yeah.
Come on, Joan.
Thanks,
okay.
Mark.
You're welcome, Linda. Take care. Okay, Joan. Now, because I didn't mention it, tell us your name and what years you were at the station.
My name is Joan Brandesky-Fulton. I was Joan Brandesky then, and I was on the station from 1978 until 1981 when I graduated.
And the same year as I was on
right.
the station.
In fact, Mark was the person who did my news break when I had a morning show. And that's how we first got to really know each other, because Mark was very dedicated to doing professional newscasts with actuality. And that meant having to put a cart into the machine and not having the opportunity to, say, run out to the lobby and grab some coffee or go to the ladies' room while the newscast was on. You actually had to stay there for the newscast and punch up the cart to hear the governor speak or the university president talk about something. And never being the morning person then and not one now, it was not my favorite thing to do, but
your life miserable.
I mean, yes, you did. But it was really, you know, professional radio in your mind, and that's on my mind as well.
Well, I'll tell you, it was really the couple of times I met Paul Rosenthal,
mm-hmm.
and I saw what he did, and I really was trained, Mark Schilling,
right.
and all those folks trained
right.
me how to do that,
mm-hmm.
and they instilled that work ethic.
Yeah.
And we did the 2 1-hour public affairs show per
right.
week on the podium,
mm-hmm.
which then became the on the GD podium.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
So we really wanted to, you know, help instill, you know, and keep that tradition of professionalism
right.
that everyone
yeah.
else was doing in their own way. You know, I didn't want to slack off.
Right.
And, you know, you really helped both me. But those were good days.
Yeah.
I really looked fondly upon them.
You know, we were at the dinner last night, and I saw a bunch of people I haven't seen since 15 years ago, since the last reunion. And at that time, and we were talking to someone earlier today about the history of the station, and when you and I were on the station, which was just the post-FM time into the early 80s, WCDB was really at its peak. It was listened to in every dorm room on the campus. It was listened to every apartment off campus where a student could be found. It was listened to in the surrounding community. And we were people who were known. We had Arbitron ratings. I think if you remember when the ARBs came out our senior year, that we were ranked, you know, along with all the other commercial stations. And this is, in very many ways, this is where the musical taste of the people who are in our generation were formed, because this is also the time when the new wave and the punk and the early alternative was breaking. And we were really the first places in the Capital District region where you could hear The Clash, where you could hear The Ramones, where you could hear Elvis Costello and Nick Lowe, where you could hear bands like U2, that we would go home on breaks and holidays. We'd go to Greenwich Village to the import shops. We would bring the records back, and we would play them on the air. And this is the first time that the campus would hear these new, different-sounding bands. and the surrounding community would hear them as well. So we heard the story when we were driving down here about playing the Beatles for the first time in the air. And this is part of a tradition which seems to have continued with the station. And the era that you and I were here, that was very much what we did.
And you had a nickname.
I have.
Come on, we got to go on the record for the oral history. We can't let anyone forget this.
My nickname then, and among the crowd here that we saw last night, I was the radio sweetheart.
And you still are to me.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Thank you. And, you know, a lot of people greeted me saying, sweetheart, it's the radio sweetheart. And that really is something that luckily is following me around for the rest of my life. So I'm very happy to be that. And for those of you who don't know, there is an Elvis Costello song called "The Radio." Play One More for Your Radio Sweetheart. And I adopted that and I'd play a little snippet of it at the beginning and the end of my show, and that's how people would know me. And I was just saying to someone else who will be on the air soon, my partner in crime for my whole time here, Trudy Lesser, you know, people would see me on campus and they'd know me as the radio sweetheart.
Now, do you remind your husband of that on Valentine's
Day? My husband did not attend the school. I did not.
No, but do you remind him about that?
Oh, I've told him stories about
that. Does he send you Valentine's card saying,
no,
you're my radio sweetheart now?
No, he doesn't. He's got another different pet name for me, but... no, he very much knows about my involvement here. He was not go to the school in any way, shape, or form, and never really knew of this place until I told him of it. And he actually is a professional broadcaster. He works at ABC News and had worked in radio for many years, worked at ABC Sports. And, you know, he is on the technical mm-hmm. side of things. And, you know, that's really something that I think early in our relationship sort of brought us together, in that he had also been in radio very early in his career. So he and I understood where he was coming from. He knew I knew a little something about it. And, you know, we have this very common bond about music and different types of music, although, you know, he likes very different music in some ways than what I do. I mean, you know, my big confession to everyone was, you know, the original punk rock chick who's married a deadhead. And, which, you know, is like the antithesis of things. So, but, you know, that's also been a very good thing. But I was also, in addition to being a DJ, was on the board, the radio station board. I was also the promotions director my senior year. We did, as an offshoot of the Oral History Project, with someone, we had an interview with some of the women who were around in the early FM days, and you know, we were, myself and the next person will hopefully be on, mm-hmm. Lesser, were part of the power structure, which was very rare and unusual for any organization on campus at the time.
Well, you should know that the early days of SUA, they discouraged women.
Yeah, no, they did. I heard.
You did drive off the road when you heard that, did you?
And, no, I didn't hear that, but it's, you know, we were really the first two female DJs yeah. who were able to break through to prime time to get mm-hmm. shows that were in the evening, which, you know, was very, very difficult for anybody in the station, but absolutely impossible for a woman in the early days. We were, you know, part of the power structure, mm-hmm. and that we were part of the people who made the station run and happen. We organized the first Rafters Party, which were the major public events mm-hmm. of WCDB through the 80s, I was told. We did the program guide on a semester basis, which was a music magazine and scheduling. So, you know, very many ways we were responsible for the broader community view of the station beyond what people heard on the air.
Some people still saved their admission card and laminated them.
That,
did you see it
yes,
in the display
no,
case?
And you know, Raptors, after its first time out, it became the hottest event on campus.
Well, you
like
always did it the third week in November.
Third week in November.
And that was my birthday,
right.
November 18th. So I
yes.
thought you did it for my birthday.
And then
was,
we actually
you know.
Started doing it twice a year. We did it in November and we did it in March.
Yeah.
And, you know, it usually snowed on one of those occasions. And, you know, it was a hot ticket. People were scalping tickets for $25. And these were things that you could only get if you called into the station for free. And they were scalping them for $25, which in 1980 and 81, that was big money for college students.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were these massive events, and these were things that I organized and I was responsible for doing. And, you know, I was a 21-year-old kid, and I, quite frankly, had no clue what I was doing, but
were you
had to do them.
Were you one of the ones that minored in classes and majored in radio?
I actually did. I tell you, I spent, as my, but it was interesting, as my time at the radio station increased, So did my cumulative average for some reason. And, you know, I came in to the radio station with a 2.0, and by the time I graduated, a 4.0. So, you know, but I was also a, they don't have it now, a rhetoric and communications major, so a lot of what I was learning in class, I was actually able to do something with while on the air. And, you know, but it was just, this was obviously the focus of my college career. You know, I did other things. I did write for the Ask occasionally. I was involved in a couple other things on campus. I had a circle of friends outside the radio station. But, you know, this really was the center for my life. And you know, it was like I lived to be on the air, and I lived to be part of the crew there. And, you know, we had a great crew the years I was there, the early days of FM. You know, people whose names have come up, I'm sure. Richard Shankman and Paul Hennigan and Dave Reisman, Alan Rothstein, Neil Siegel, Dennis Shire, you know, Fred Plevin, and then Dermot Quinn, Russ Rieger, Jim Diamond. You know, these were Jack Isquith, who I
know. If you start naming names, you're going to leave someone out.
Trudy Lesser. I met my best friend in the whole world at the radio station, and we met each other at the radio station. We have been best friends since then. We live on different coasts. We talk at least once a week, if not more. We have stood up for each other at each other's weddings. I would not have met her had I not been involved in the station. And while the station form the core of our friendship, it has, you know, grown and developed into so much more. And, you know, we have a common history together that was formed at the station.
And I've heard so many other stories like that over the years.
Yeah.
It's been heartwarming.
Yeah.
And it's been so terrific. And
mm-hmm.
It's like people, you know, I'm glad that I was able to get people to realize that it's a bigger picture. So many
yeah.
times last night we had our reunion dinner, people said to me, I didn't realize there were so many SUA people left. I didn't realize we had that many SUA people. So I wanted to have this, you know, broadcast really dedicated, you know, to show off WSUA and where we started from, and like our slogan
yeah.
says, bringing it back to where it all began.
Yeah.
Because it really began
and,
here.
Yeah,
we
definitely have, listening to some of the stories last night, we absolutely have a debt of gratitude to give to those folks, because, you know, it was not under ideal conditions, the SUA broadcast, you know, particularly once the Uptown campus was was put up. And, you know, but they struggled through, they kept going, you know, the battles to get the FM license, to get on the air. You know, I remember the day CDB went on the air FM, and it was a big deal.
It was.
It was a very big deal. And the first anniversary and all the years following, and, you know, I was on the board when we actually were granted the license, or we got the approval from the FCC to go 100 watts. And that was a big deal. And Jim Diamond, who just, he went personally, he grew up going away to spring break. He went down to Washington, D.C. He walked the halls of the FCC to see that we would get that approval. And, you know, this was something that we just felt we owed the radio station, we owed the community, and we owed the students that we could give this gift to them.
And now the current students owe you a great debt of gratitude, and Jim Diamond and all those, and all of us from the early days.
Yeah.
And the current students, really, that's another part of it. They have to know what we did
yeah.
in the beginning of the FM station. And they have no idea. They are so clueless
mm-hmm.
as to what's going on with the history. But now they're more informed. Now they're better.
Yeah.
And they're going to appreciate us. I can't tell you how many times they've been up to the station, and they said, go away, old man. Like, what are you bothering us for? Why are you up here still? And I'm like, you know, unless I dye my hair, I mean, you're never going to know. It's like, leave me alone.
So,
I just want to come up here and experience and continue to feel what was going on, you know?
So it was, you know, a tremendous experience, and mm-hmm. it was just, you know, we all very much had a love of music. Those of us who were on the DJ side of things, and I think, you know, the people in news and sports as well, you know, they all liked being around that, and you know, we just had a love of what we were doing, and it meant so much to us on a very personal level. And it wasn't just, oh, I like this song, I like that song, but, like, the music that was going on at the time was very important to us, because it was political
mm-hmm.
music, and it was different, and it was angry, and it was a way of expressing ourselves that had not been available to the young people at the time for a long time. And, you know, as restrictive as radio is today, it was also restrictive back then. And, you know, we were just going through the bands that we literally broke at, you know, WCDB. That was the first time people got to hear certain bands and certain people, and you know, did that later went on to become these huge, big, seminal acts. It's just been tremendous to think that we all did this while we were full-time college students, whether or not we had teams of, you know, plus or minus a point or two above zero. But we also had other lives and we had other things going on, and, you know, we had friends outside the station and we had relationships and things like that, and, you know, but we all did this. So it was great training just for real life,
mm-hmm.
going out into real life, and how do you juggle things? How do you make it to class and do your final and plan a rafters party and do your shift and, you know, all that stuff.
Many sleepless nights, yes.
Many, many sleepless nights.
But it was all worth it. And you know what? It's, for me, it instilled a work ethic.
It did.
That
absolutely.
Really, you know, carried me through. Even to put this reunion together, when I was doing the on-the-cuff banquet tape, mm-hmm. and getting all those sound bites together, I was up there at 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
For a couple of nights, and everyone, they looked, the last DJ who closed up at 2 in the morning, he looked at me and said, why are you still here? You know, it's like, aren't you going home? You know, and that didn't, Steve O'Trouba and I, and Steve Groves and Pete Scrove,
yeah.
we would all be up there at all hours of the night to edit tape and to make sure that the shows got on the way they was, at the time they were supposed to, no excuses,
yeah.
no reruns
yeah,
because
no,
we couldn't meet deadlines. You know, it was a dedication.
And that was the standard. That was what was expected.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as though we, you know, said, you know, that we didn't expect anything less of ourselves than that. That we really felt that this was important to us, but also important to the school and to the community, that we have a real radio station. That we sound professional,
mm-hmm.
that we didn't screw up our segues, that we didn't have dead air, that, you know, when we did a sports broadcast, the link worked and you weren't doing things, and that you got out of the song on time to get the news on, and, you know, that you did these things and you paid attention to them. And it was really something I think all of us, as I've talked to the people coming back, you know, stayed with us for the rest of our lives. And, you know, as we've gone on to our lives, it's just really, you know, that's where it all started, for us at least. Because you weren't being pushed like that. I don't remember being pushed like that with my classes or, you know, and it all came from inside us, and because this is so important to us.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I remember those mornings when you were the DJ and I was doing the news.
And I'd see you coming in and you'd have this cart in your hand and I'd just be like, no, I want some coffee. I'm going to go downstairs and get some coffee. And you go, well, can you play this one? And I'm going to see, and I'll cue you. And then you push the button, you play that one. And and then I'd have to, and now here's Mark Brunish with the news. And, you know, and then we get through it.
You get the jingle going,
right.
And then you get me trying to
right.
get...
Oh, yes, and then we every year, as everybody knows, we did a banquet tape. And our final year there with Mark, and we had Mark Brunish saying his name on an endless loop. I'm Mark Brunish, I'm Mark Brunish, I'm Mark Brunish, I'm Mark Brunish. And one of my other nicknames within the station was called The Screamer. And the reason for that is there were a number of shows that we did. We had some live comedy shows on the air. There was a show called Radio Free Albany. There was, you know, a couple of follow-up shows that we set. Was it Wednesday Night Dead was the other one that we had. A Wednesday Night Taped was sort of successor to Radio Free Albany. And we'd done this one sketch where they needed someone to scream. You know, it was a takeoff on a murder mystery thing, and every time somebody said murder or a word that sounded like murder, I had to scream. So we were doing it live. So by the end of the night, I must have screamed 25 times. So I was completely hoarse. But I got this nickname of the Screamer, and plus also sometimes my demeanor in board meetings would be, let's just say, not all that pleasant when we get into heated discussions and arguments about the direction the station should be taking or the type of music we should be playing. And so anyway, we did the banquet tape with the endless loop of Mark, I'm my frontage, I'm my frontage, I'm my frontage, I'm my frontage, followed me by doing my scream.
You're not going to do the scream now?
I
think everyone's potting down their levels.
All right, pot down your levels. We'll give it one more time for the alumni out there. And a one, and a two, and a three.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody just walked in.
Walked in. That's right. I didn't do it. I'm innocent.
Anyway, no. so that was the other side. And I was also a participant. I wrote and I acted on Radio Free Albany and Wednesday Night Tapes, which is another side part of it. Actually, there were a couple of promos that we did that some of us had written that made it down to a college radio music festival, one of which I had participated in that won an award for, like, the best promo. And, you know, these little things that we did that were just, you look back on it, and you're like, I did this.
Wow.
This is terrific. So.
Well, thanks, Joan, for stopping in.
Well, thank you, Mark.
The radio sweetheart.
Oh, yeah, well, it's just great to be back, and I thank you so much for all your efforts to put this together, and it's just been tremendous.
I now know what you went through with the rafters.
It was really, really something else, though, but it's just been tremendous, and I'm just so glad to hear about the foundation.
And I hope to see you back on a more regular basis,
well,
and when I'm down in New York, I'll come by and see you,
yeah,
and we'll
please.
Go have a coffee or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been tremendous. I'm so glad I'm back on the airwaves, even just a little bit, and... it's been great. Now my partner in crime.
Come on, Trudy.
My
Trudy Lester.
In crime.
All the way from California, the bi-coastal duo here. And we're going to have Trudy do some reminiscing about the early days of the FM station. Trudy, what years were you at the station?
I was at the station the same years as you and Joan, 1977 to 1981. But I actually started...
Those 5 years?
The, no,
oh, 4 years. Oh, all right. I was 1981.
I actually started.
You did on SUA.
Yeah, SUA, and they trained me just when we were switching over, and I got to meet some of the guys that were here today, and transition with them.
What are your remembrances of Paul Rosenthal?
You know, I have to honestly say, I didn't work much with him.
Yeah,
I just remember that by the time we got here, he was just a legend.
Mm.
He was like the example that set the tone for the station, the talent and the dedication, but I didn't have the opportunity, unfortunately, to work with him, but I've heard such wonderful things.
Did you learn more about him over this reunion weekend from the program guide and all that
stuff?
Yeah,
people have been talking about him, it's great, and I've got the guide to take home with him, so we get to remember him. He did quite a bit follow us, and it was unfortunate, but he left a great legacy, and I hope he's been carrying on.
And that's why I wanted to do this. And when I called, I spent 2 weeks tracking down his parents. They live in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, look, we'd like to do this and honor his legacy. And he was 25 when he passed away, and it was the 25th anniversary. And we really wanted to have something special for him. And they said, well, that would be wonderful. They sent me his pictures, which I didn't have, but, one of them interviewing Sharon Ward, if you remember Sharon. And then a very basic stock photo, which was used in the program guide.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also told me that his brother had been living in Albany all this time. And I looked him up and I called him, and I saw that he was living in Del Mar, where the first chief engineer Ira Goldstein lived. And I called Ira and I said, do you know that Paul's brother lives in Del Mar? And he almost fell off his seat because his children play with Hal's children, Paul's brother. And Ira always said, Hal smiles, I see Paul. But how do you make that connection otherwise, Oh, it's a familiar last name.
Yes. Well, I think we're finding that...
Small Albany stories.
Small world all over the place. You're always finding out people that you actually knew or they know somebody that you knew.
So tell me about your times at the station. Like, what did you do besides hanging out with Joan and...
Joan and I were a pretty good team. Oh, here comes one of the guys that was part of our Irigen Diamonds.
I thought he left and went home already. He came back. He heard you and turned around and came back here.
Can't get rid of the guy, I walked into the station about the second day of freshman year because I had done radio in high school. I was fortunate that we had it. And
which high school?
Syosset.
Oh, okay. Long Island.
And it was, Joan pretty much said all the things that I do share as well about what the station was to us. I loved music. I was raised with music, people in the industry and my family, and it was everything that I loved, and all of a sudden we had this giant toy to play with, and 14,000 albums in the record library, and that was my first job. I was the record librarian, so I would come up and organize them and listen to them and learn about them, and the idea that you could get on the air pick whatever music you wanted, play it, talk about it, and just have fun. This isn't a job. This is a joy. This is just a joy. Then Rich Shankman started a lot of different things. He actually, I have to correct Joan Slavin, he actually did the first Raffers Party,
okay,
as well as the first new, music magazine. He taught us how to do it. And then he took off for, you know, bluer, greener pastures such as MTV, and left us that job to expand on it. We had a blast. I mean, our last 2 years, we put out the music magazine, we did the Raffers Party,
mm-hmm,
and Joan and I were talking before, a lot of us were talking, we were up at the station talking about the role of the women on the station, and a lot of people said that we were celebrities, and it never occurred to me that we were. We had a lot of fun. People knew who we were because we were on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it was fun. Until we were at the rafters, looking down, DJing, and all these 1,500 people dancing,
mm-hmm,
and looking up at us, waiting for us to create their evening. That was the first time I think I realized that we were doing something pretty cool and significant and different, and it was, all of it was just a joy.
You know, you mentioned that, and it really is what drove me with this reunion,
mm-hmm,
is that I knew that I was going to be creating something that would influence and shape everyone's weekend from all around,
yeah,
the country, and they were coming in, and
well,
it really is something.
We have to thank you, Mark. You've done a human job in putting this together and sticking with it, and all of us who have ever tried to organize anything, even if it wasn't on the scale of what you've done, know how much work this is, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Trudy.
Thank you for doing this. We've gotten to see a lot of people that we would not have seen. Or,
and I've heard that from a lot of the other eras. For example, there was this one woman who was in Kingston,
mm-hmm,
and knew of a friend of hers who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
She was there visiting with a friend, and she says, you know, I'm going to be at this reunion, and I want to track down Mitch Javen. Mitch Javen! Mitch Javen lives 2 blocks from me! And he called him up. He was packing to leave for a trip, and he dropped everything and ran 2 blocks over and hugged her. Oh, it was a big thing. And
thanks to you, Mark.
You know, so
I got in touch with Andy Geller for the first time in about 7 years. So I now know where he is. He actually lives not far from me in Los Angeles.
Isn't that amazing?
And all these other people that I've discovered from our group that actually live in L.A., I haven't seen them in years. We're now all back in touch with each other, and hopefully it'll stay that way.
Well, I've created somewhat of an amazing mailing list so far, and I'm going to continue to build on that. I'm not stopping because, you know, it's so frustrating every 5 years or 10 years to have to recreate this.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't update the numbers and all that, it goes out of date after 2 years, and it's, you know, you put all this time and you just don't want it to go all the way. So I'm going to continue this mission.
Good, I hope you will, because even though we've all gone in different directions professionally and our lives have taken different turns, we did share something really extraordinary here. It created a bond. As Joan said, we've had the pleasure of being best friends for over 25 years. Yikes. that's scary even just to say out loud. But everybody here, you know, you can pick up a conversation if you haven't seen them in 10 years,
mm-hmm,
because we have this bond.
That's
we
right.
have this thing that we did together that
Absolutely.
Left its mark on us both because we loved what we were doing, and it taught us not only the work ethic, but that we really could do anything we set our minds to.
Absolutely.
Thank you for continuing that.
And with this reunion, I have to say that Bill McCann really helped quite a bit in the industry panel.
Mm-hmm.
He put all that together himself.
That was wonderful.
And that was really a nice addition to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I personally didn't think anyone was going to show up from the campus for it. I really didn't, because it was Parents Weekend, it was homecoming.
I hope you saw that the room was overflowing.
Well, I heard, and it was overflowing,
mm-hmm,
and it was such a nice addition, and I was so happy Bill went forward, and Dermot Quinn, he suggested it, and Josh Rosenthal pushed it, and it really was great, and Bill really came up with some great ideas and made a nice addition to this whole weekend also, so, you know.
Well, you guys have done a great thing. Just, you know, next time you have to kind of get somebody to be somewhat of a muzzle for us. Unless you just want the Rush show with a couple of other people coming. Rush has, Joan and I were both commenting, of all the people that we know, he had the most energy when we were here. I mean,
other people thrived off of it.
And
they really did.
Still, he hasn't changed a bit.
No.
I don't know how Mary, bless her heart, continues to put up with it, but he's just this
bundle
force.
Of energy. Mm-hmm.
He's a force of nature. But yeah, you've done a great thing.
Thank you, Trudy, very much.
And
I'm so glad you were here.
Yeah,
we have
great.
Another 15 minutes.
All right.
Dave Goldman is here. Yeah. Come on.
Come on in, Dave, you know?
Okay. Well,
Jim's been on three times, four times, you know. Jim's been around forever. Yeah, so.
Well, I hope you're making a tape of this that we can all
Yeah, we are, and I'm going to edit it down and do something with it because it's 4 hours.
Oh,
and,
my God.
You know, I'm sure you don't want 4 hours
All right,
of tape.
Well, thanks again.
But we'll do stuff with this.
All
thank
right.
you, Trudy, so much for coming in from California. I know it wasn't easy, but thank you very much. And,
it was never a question the second
okay.
I got the invitation.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
You.
Okay.
There's and, David.
Okay. Just for the record, because we're doing the oral history, just tell me your name and the years that you were here.
Okay. David Goldman. I was at Albany from 76 to 80, class of 80, and I was on WSUA for a brief period. I think I told
tell the audience.
Oh, let me tell the audience. Right. I'm talking to the audience now. Hey, out there in Radio Land. It's a big 421, it says here.
Greetings from Radio Reunion Land.
From Radio Reunion Land, a little bit north of where I am in New York. I was on the air on SUA briefly because back then, when I was a freshman, one of the first things I wanted to do when I arrived on campus, because I'd never had a radio station in my high school where I went to Long Island because all the equipment had been stolen.
Okay.
That, I should mention that's East Meadow, by the way, which is known for its wonderful staff and everything. But anyway, so they stole the radio station. I knew Albany had a radio station. I said, oh, that's a really cool thing. I'd love to be on the air. And back then, what you would do is you would train with, I guess, someone who had been on the air for 2-3 years or whatever. I wish I could remember his name. He was a really nice guy, and he had a show in the afternoons, and I think he would train me. And then towards the middle of the end of the semester, around November, December of 76, I think this was, he couldn't do a couple of shows, and he said, you can fill in because you're set. So I did, I think, a couple of, like, two-hour shows maybe once a week, which was wonderful for me because I'd been looking forward to doing that, and that was when he had records and carts and all that. And then I didn't get back on the air the following semester, I think, because they instituted... I don't know if you remember this. Oh, you weren't there then. Suddenly you had to pass a test, even though I'd already been on the air. You had to pass a test to go back on the air.
You don't know this about me, but I remember things of where I wasn't really there, so I still remember those things. Then.
So they tested me, and I didn't know how to do something, like take a feed from the phones or something. So I didn't make it back onto the air until... I guess when CDB came back on, the SUA continued the fall of 77 as well before we went FM, right? There was still SUA on the air then, or did we?
We used it as a training room. SUA is a training studio.
In other words, before the FM station, because we didn't go FM until March of 78. So that year before.
And WSUA
was
on
still
the
broadcasting
air until.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Then, once they started the FM station, I really wanted to be on that, and I went to all the, there were a lot of meetings, of course, before CDB was officially on.
Right.
And I got to know the people there, and a lot of them lived on my quad, I'm Indian, and I just got really friendly with them, and I said I'd love to be part of this. And when we signed on the air on March 1st, I think, which was a Wednesday.
Yes, it was. 4 o'clock.
On Wednesday, at 4 o'clock? Oh, see, that's why Saturno was on, because it was the middle of his show.
No, it was Alan Rothstein's show.
Then why was Saturno?
I asked him. He says he just couldn't
make it or something,
they,
perhaps. Saturno was on until like 6. Oh, isn't that funny? I didn't realize that. Okay. Well, I was on the air like the third day we were on. I think I had a Friday show back then, and I think I was on Fridays and Tuesdays.
Well, if it was Friday, it was really the second day because that sign-on really was all that there was to the day. Because of the transmission, they had to bring the transmission problems. They had to bring the
station
down.
Oh, they didn't
down.
Continue on that night to like 6, 7, 8 o'clock?
They tried to bring it up for a sports event, but
right.
they couldn't, so they brought the station down, and Iris spent all night making sure the signal was clear.
Okay.
And then Mike Fisher and Paul Rosenthal doing the news was the first morning show.
On
Thursday, March 2nd.
I don't know. Oh, okay. Well, then that Friday, I definitely was on. I had a show. Yeah. I wish I saved the playlist. I think I remember what my first set was. And back then, in 78, was the height of the whole new wave thing. And I was starting to listen to that, but I also liked old rock and roll stuff. So I think I opened with, like, you know, Dave Edmunds, Elvis Costello's Mystery Dance, Robert Gordon's Red Hot, and something else in that show, maybe a Beatles tune or something. And what a lot of people have probably said already, and this is true, is that not only was I fortunate to be here at the beginning of the radio station going FM, but I was also here when all this new wave stuff was starting to come out, and all these bands, like I think people have mentioned, I mean, the Police played Albany in a club for like 50 people. Talking Heads, we were an opening act for a Long Island band called the Good Rats back in 77. when no one knew who they were. And so a lot of bands were just starting out back then. Even someone mentioned after I graduated, he too, I think, played here.
Yes, they did. Absolutely.
And, yeah, the Police would play a little club downtown and, you know, had very few people. Elvis Costello played Page Hall, which I don't know if it's used for shows anymore over here, for 900 or so people. Warren Zevon played the week after Costello played. By the way, I believe this was the same month that we went on the air or something.
So music was really your full love and interest, and that's what you really did?
I may be the only music major to be on, that might not be true, to be on the air. I had kind of a double life.
Outside of the SUA folks. I mean, from the CDB folks.
From the CDB folks, I think.
Because the SUA folks had music.
Oh, the music major?
Well, the first crew.
Oh, well, okay.
You know, yeah. They were.
I was a keyboard piano player and pianist and had studied it, you know, all through high school and junior high.
Well, from what I heard Friday night, you were still a keyboard player.
Friday night at the, that was fun playing Ozzy Osbourne songs and stuff. So I was playing piano and studying, you know, Debussy and Bach and all that during the day, and had to give a recital at the end of my year, and then going on the air and playing this wild rock and roll during it. So I had kind of this dual life, and actually, I really would have spent more time at the radio station, but my major took up a lot of practice time, and I played for operas and things like that. And I was writing for the ASS. There was this, a little bit of crossover, I think, also between people who wrote not just for the ASS, but there were other publications on campus back then also. I mean, they still be.
Yeah.
And the radio station. And I think I was on concert board for a little while.
And you still do writing.
And I still write, of course. I write about
you do biography?
Celebrities. I'm writing for Biography Magazine, which
that's terrific.
To change its format. And I've written about music. And over the years, I've gotten to interview for Biography. I interviewed Brian Wilson, which is a challenge.
So did you ever think that CDB would be where it is today?
Where it is today?
I'm not saying that's good or bad.
I wonder how you were phrasing that.
Exactly. It's an objective question.
I don't know. I've actually come to all the other, I think most of the other reunions. There was one in 81, maybe, when I was after I left. In 82, there was one. I think it was when they did the Raptors party.
We did the 5th year, the 10th year, 20th year, and now the
25th. They did a 5th year in 83?
Yeah.
I don't remember going to that. You know, when did the Raptors finally close? Was it like 80?
Well, I don't know when the Raptors closed, but I know that we did. You know, we did these reunions, and the 10th really
that
you
was,
know, was okay.
It came to that,
and then the 20th they couldn't get the list together, so they really didn't know about it. Now I got everything. You know,
no, this has
Bill
been wonderful. I mean, it's so amazing that. Well, I don't know. It's been great seeing. I mean, what I have noticed, if I can mention this, is that all us guys from the girl and girls, I'm not trying to be sexist.
Generic, yeah.
Guys is the generic guys, I'm using it that way, who were around in the early days of the station and kind of through the mid-80s, a lot of us seem to have shown up. I haven't really noticed a lot of people from, like, I don't know, 90, 91, 92, 93.
Well, if you look at your seating chart, that's why I put the class years down.
Yes. Oh, no,
I wanted people to know, because everyone would look at the names and say, well, who's that? Yeah. Why are they here?
It's really been interesting, though, meeting a lot of guys from, like, the early days of, or not the early days of SUA, but, like, in the 70s in SUA when we were still in AM.
Well, speaking of the early guys, and we're only on until 2, so I got another, and I have another gentleman here from the very first executive team.
Wow.
From WSUA.
Okay.
He lives locally, too.
Okay.
So we can get him on any time. But you have something here that you
have a tape that I wanted to just... I don't have to do this on the air, but...
Well, you can.
It's a collection of stuff I was involved with, including there are excerpts from the last show I did here. There's a kind of a thing that may have made it to the banquet tape of Joan, which I don't know if she's aware of.
Okay.
I have someone named Debbie Lang reading a poem on the air in the manner she thought she was Alison Steele, and she was trying to do an Alison Steele kind of moment. We'll have to explain who Alison Steele was. And I also have a lot of excerpts from the comedy show that I was involved with, which was a lot of fun, called Radio Free Albany.
We were just talking about that with Bob O'Brien.
Bob O'Brien was, I think, the engineer on that show, and he also wrote... Everybody kind of did everything. It was cool.
Yeah,
he was the engineer.
Andy Lederer.
Andy Lederer was on that show. I think he was on that show. It was created, I think, by Kevin Kelton, who you may have spoken to, who is here, and Mark Rappaport. And I was on it a little bit in the spring of 78, and then... In the fall, in October, November, December, that's when a lot of these sketches are from. And Joan and Richard Shankman, who couldn't make it, unfortunately, and me, and who else is on here? Leslie Reff, who I don't know is really a radio person. Dave Lester is on here, who maybe you know the name of. And then the other thing I have on here, which I don't know if anyone's mentioned yet, is to mark the first anniversary of CDB going on the air.
Yes.
We had Born to Run played on the Carillon, which I did, and I have that on here. That's the first thing on here.
I'm so honored that you're going to give this to us. That was so wonderful.
Do you not have a copy of that?
I do not, and I wanted your version on the Carillon
for, and I was hoping to get this.
Thank you very much. Don't play the whole thing, because it's about 4.5 minutes of Born to Run, followed by about 4.5 minutes of rock and roll stuff on the Carolina.
But this is wonderful.
It's really funny.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks,
for coming
Mark.
In.
It's been great.
I wanted to invite one of the early WSUA people.
Thanks, Mark.
Onto the, coming up here and talking to us about the first year at WSUA. We have Ian Leet. Ian, what was your title at when you were on the executive team? What was that first? What was your first title?
I was the assistant station manager at the time.
But were you a music director or something?
I was music director.
You were music director. Now, what years were you at the station?
63 to 67, more
67,
or less.
Yeah, okay.
But after,
more or less is what I've been hearing from everyone. Yes.
Well,
like,
I had a 7-year academic career here.
Did you major in radio and minor in classes?
No.
Okay.
Actually, I majored in radio. I majored in film and minored in radio.
Okay. To get classes, right?
And the classes were somewhat
non-existent.
Non-existent for a couple of years there.
So, what do you do now?
I'm retired, actually, from the State Motor Vehicle Department, where I worked for 37 years. It was a great career, a very interesting career. Took me all over the state. I got to meet a lot of great people.
How many different license plates did you go through? I know.
Four.
Yeah.
During my time there, yeah, actually.
And what was the... Now, we've been talking with Nick Argyros and Bill Alexander and Art Loader, you know, all from the early days, and Dave Hughes, and, you know, they were telling us all these wonderful stories about the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that Beatles story, that, maybe the person who was kicked off or anything like
no,
that?
No, I actually don't. Nick handled that as general manager, and we did have a lot of discussions about what was going to be a part of the playlist, and we had developed what we thought was a pretty inflexible standard and a pretty highfalutin standard, you'd say now, because we definitely didn't want to include certain kinds of stuff. And
Beatles are one of them, obviously.
Yeah. If you varied from that, you were going to see some sanctions of some sort or other. What I mostly remember about the early days is how totally experimental it was. Bill Alexander probably has described to you the fact that they had a radio club here for many years,
yes,
for a dozen years or so before anybody did anything. And finally, we just decided that it was time to stop being a club and start being a station. And the result of that was this little experiment that we had downstairs here, right below this lobby. It's fun to be back. I haven't been in this building in actually probably
37 years,
yeah. And so it's kind of interesting to see how much of it is the same as when we left it.
Well, I'll tell you something. Did you go down and see this picture?
I didn't see this particular picture.
Okay, this is the only left of WSUA where the switch is still turned on.
Yes.
It says Radio Master WSUA, do not turn off, and they haven't turned it off in 32
years.
Yes,
I did see that. We were just looking at the at the master panel downstairs, and the switches are still on.
So when you say things haven't changed so much, the switch hasn't
changed
either.
Yeah, at the ventilation system. And my recollection is that ventilation system was something that was put in because of the heat of the equipment and so on that we had to do, which is why there are some of those holes poked in the closet down there.
I also wanted to let you know that you talk about experimental music, and the early day WCDB folks were talking about experimental music, but they didn't get kicked off the air for doing breaking format.
It was a different time. They were
lectured, but they weren't kicked off. So.
It was a different time.
Do you actually remember hearing the Beatles song on the radio?
No.
Do you know what song it was? I heard it was I Want to Hold Your Hand, is what I was told.
That's likely, but I don't remember it.
Okay.
Yeah. What I remember about this was it was such a different structure back then. We had a dean of men and a dean of women, Dean Thorne and Dean Stokes, respectively. And therefore, things were really pretty traditional. Mrs. Eleanor Hathaway, who was the wife of the athletic director, Merlin Hathaway, was actually the housemistress in charge of Brubacher here. And it was kind of by their good graces that we were able to do here. But
I remember we told she didn't want men in the...
That is correct. Yeah, that's correct. And in fact, that's one that Dave Hughes was reminding me last night of a time when we were waiting for a Miss Kenya vote or something to report on the news. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting, and I just kept stringing and stringing and stringing along, and the vote didn't come in. Finally, it came in, and we got off the air, but we didn't get off the air until after midnight. And she was very upset, and she complained to the administration about it, and we were given a talking to.
Those boys, they'll be the death of me yet.
Yes, yes, that's right. It was really quite... quite an experience.
Well, I'm glad you had that experience. That really, you know, was... did that affect your life? Did you do anything with that? Did it give you confidence to go ahead and to do things that you never thought you would do?
I never used the radio part of it, mm-hmm. but the experiences I had of dealing with people and of meeting people that had different interests than I had was something that I carried with me, and it helped make me a broader person than I would have been otherwise.
Well,
both physically and...
Well, you don't look as broad as some of the other people I've seen. So
yeah, that's
okay.
True.
That's
I'm looking at some of my former colleagues here, and they're a little broader than I am.
Ian, thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us and being here to share your thoughts and your memories. I mean, it's really been a pleasure to meet you, and you're local, so I'm going to track you down. We're going to go out for some coffee or something. And
you're darn right we are.
This won't be the last time. So.
That, you're right about that.
Okay, thank you so
this
much.
It's been a wonderful weekend and a terrific event, and I can't thank you guys all enough, you and Bill McCann and the whole committee that worked on this thing. It's been so much fun to be back downstairs trying to remember where the grill was and all that sort of thing. It was really... really been just a fabulous event, and I'm really proud to have been part of it and of the heritage.
And I'm very proud that you were in the first executive team. Thank you very much. And this wraps up our reminiscence and remembrances of WSUA and WCDB and radio at the University of Albany. I really want to thank everyone for being here and for taking the time. And I want to thank Craig Maroska for being our engineer for this, the current sports director of WCDB. Craig has been terrific hooking up this remote for us. If it wasn't for him, we couldn't do it. So thank you, Craig. It is now 2:00. This is WCDB Albany.